Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Wednesday afternoon, October 15th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Spanish language audiences grow even as TV viewership declines. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, on this Personal Finance Wednesday, if you're unhappy with your money manager, make a change. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ed Jertsen, Certified Financial Planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And obviously, you have a dog in this particular hunt, but when does a money manager or a financial manager, when does that make sense for you?
Yeah, Rob, you know, we believe that most everyone can benefit from financial advice and good financial advice. And I'll be biased here, especially from a certified financial planner that takes more of a comprehensive view. And this is such an important topic because the markets have been doing quite well for some time. So individuals think, wow, my advisor is great. But, you know, is it the markets or is it the advisor? And this is where this interview is just so important.
And then what are some situations in which people may feel it's time to make a change in their financial advisor? What are some signs that they feel that that experience is not really worth the time or the money?
Well, we often guide people to make a list of priorities of what you need and expect from your advisor. Do you just need someone to kind of manage your portfolio and just do the investment advice? Or like the vast majority of individuals, can you benefit from a comprehensive approach that includes, you know, tax, estate planning, retirement planning, and those kind of things? And that's where you start on your list. What do you need and what you can benefit from? Then you can start seeking out the advice that might help you and guide you in the years ahead.
What are the most important attributes a good financial advisor should have when it comes to serving their clients? Is it a strategic mindset, or is it just open lines of communication?
Yeah, just cutting to the core of this, first and foremost, we strongly believe that your financial advisor should have more than what is known as your best interest at heart. They should have a legal fiduciary obligation when working with you. Remember, this is your hard-earned money. So first and foremost, understand how the advisor gets paid. And is it in a fiduciary capacity or other ways and means? So really trying to understand what you're paying for, because oftentimes we visit with clients and prospects and they tell us, well, I'm not paying much of anything because those fees are often hidden. So again, fiduciary relationships are very important, and just trust but verify all the things in regards to what that advisor is offering you.
Now, it's very easy to say, well, if your financial advisor is not meeting these criteria, it's time to move on to another one in a very logical and clean manner. But how often, in your experience, Ed, do people, you know, their financial advisor is a longtime family friend who went into the business or even a relative. And if you were to try to sever that relationship, it could cause a serious, you know, rift in a friendship or in a family.
Excellent point, Rob. And again, money is emotion. And we've had clients who've had long-term relationships with advisors. And when they learn and understand the difference between, again, just kind of investment advice and comprehensive advice, that's where the changes come. So again, these changes typically are done very seamlessly, right? So as we guide folks, if you are going to be leaving an advisor after a long period of time, just mention to them, hey, I'm going to make a change. I might be back. And so have that good conversation up front. But again, make sure that whoever the advisor is, family, friend, long-term colleague, or things like that, that, again, they're doing the best in terms of your behalf, in terms of their interests, and that comprehensive approach.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, even as the overall audience drops, Spanish language viewership is rising. We'll talk about that TV trend next.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Spanish language audiences are booming even as overall TV viewership declines. Joining us to discuss is Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verterre Group in Chicago. Tim, thank you for joining us today. And there's a long and storied tradition of, for lack of a better word, ethnic media succeeding in this country, just because over the centuries, there's just been waves and waves of migration from all points of the compass. And then that audience is served by specialty language newspapers. They're served by specialty language radio stations. I remember spinning the dial about 30 years ago and finding a Gaelic language programming somewhere on the AM dial in Chicago. So what's happening today with the Spanish language TV audience has a long and storied tradition behind it?
Yeah, no question that the Spanish language realm of quote-unquote ethnic media, right, if you even want to use that term, right, long ago, I would say three decades ago or so, really started to break out as being sort of a much more mainstream and fully distributed kind of dynamic. It started, I think, with radio in the 1980s and 1990s, and it's really just taken on full steam. We've got two major Hispanic-oriented or Latin American-centric networks and a bunch of other smaller ones. And it's way beyond time to sort of consider and understand the Spanish language media realm in the United States and North America beyond sort of that sort of a more pigeonholed kind of environment. It is about as mainstream as you're going to find. It's also very interesting to see, though, that those dynamics are still largely misunderstood in the media industry, and it's still looked upon as almost a second-class citizenship, so to speak, in terms of media consumption and behaviors. And it's the intelligent marketer and the intelligent programmer that recognizes that Spanish language media is a significant force, with commonalities to the more Anglo-centric stuff, but with some very distinct and unique differentiated environments that distinguish it from North American media.
Well, it seems like it's a lesson a lot of people learn the hard way or in a very visceral way once an election is over, and you start to see why did certain subgroups of the electorate vote in the way that they did, and then you discover, oh, all of a sudden, you know, this outside organization or this political party made a substantial investment in Spanish language commercials on Spanish language media in Florida or some other swing state, and that really did make the difference. But is there still a great deal of linear television viewing when it comes to the people who watch Channel 44 or Channel 66 in Chicago? Or are we starting to see the time-shifting and on-demand programming trends that we see in English-language media?
So I think that's one of the crucial points that most in the media industry kind of don't yet realize. And that is this reality that I think over the last few decades, right, this the assumption that the first and maybe second generation Spanish-speaking centric viewer would be very much more of a classic and linear television viewer. And the viewership of Univision stations and Telemundo stations around the country and their progeny are certainly substantial, but not unlike the more overall viewer landscape in the United States. Streaming first has really taken hold, and I would make the argument that in the Spanish-speaking community, especially in those younger cohorts, the Gen Zs and even earlier aged, there is not only not a difference in terms of their consumption being streaming and mobile first, but probably even a more pronounced environment around that. And that is, it is, I think, taking a lot of people, especially in the realms of sports and entertainment, kind of by surprise in that there's a much more aggressive inclination to have access to Spanish language programming on the go and wherever and whenever one wants it versus sitting back and waiting for it to happen on the linear television channel.
Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, discount retailers are doing well, even as many other stores struggle. We'll go in-depth next.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
While major retailers are closing stores, off-price retailers like Ross are bucking the trend, opening new locations and expanding nationwide. Here to share his insight on the trend is Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, thank you for joining us today. Now, let's define for the audience what an off-price retailer is for purposes of this discussion.
Probably easiest to define them just by saying it's TJ Maxx in the form of Marshalls or it's TJX in the form of Marshalls and TJ Maxx. It's Ross Stores. It's Burlington Stores. It's people who are selling product significantly cheaper than what the full price players, traditionally the department stores, have always been. This all came about when the repeal of the resale price maintenance laws, known as fair trade laws, were done in the 1970s. And by 1990, all of these people had stepped in and said, hey, I can undercut the pricing in the department stores. And that's when all of those stores I just named started rolling as far as really growing the business, getting bigger, lots of business, more locations. And they grew dramatically all through the 2000s until they essentially ate all the department store business, which is why that hometown department store you might have grown up with isn't there anymore. And that's why Macy's is going down from about 850 department stores to about 350. And it's why we've seen Kohl's struggle and why JCPenney no longer has, 2,600 stores they had at the peak. Now they've got 700. So there's been an enormous erosion of full price selling by these champions of off price. And TJ Maxx is one of, or TJX that owns TJ Maxx. TJX is one of the great retailers. They're one of the five best retailers in America. And they're the only one of the off price guys that make that list. So they're really the big dominant force, and then everybody else sort of plays around them.
In some ways, Jan, this is almost like the way in which Southwest Airlines came along and disrupted all of the legacy carriers. And now you have United and American that still chase the business traveler and still chase the overseas traveler who's willing to spend some money. But in the back of the cabin, they're going after Mr. and Mrs. Spirit Airlines. And the big players had to evolve to deal with this new competitor. Now, does Macy's want to play in these waters and try to develop an off-price label, and would it even be worth the effort?
No, yes. Everybody wants to play. Saks has Saks Off Fifth. Nordstrom has Nordstrom Rack. Macy's has their Backstage presentation. And so, yes, everybody plays in it, but the other guys got in it faster and harder and built a lot of stores. And so it's harder to get in the game and play now, because quite honestly, we are now probably overstored in off-price stores, just like we're overstored in dollar stores. And yet we are still building off-price stores at a fierce pace, just like we're building dollar stores still at a fierce pace. And that's probably a problem going forward. But so far, they have had room to take all that market share from department stores. and specialty stores. And so they've got a huge business. TJ Maxx, TJX, is bigger now than Macy's ever was. So it's hard to be the off-price guys when there's no full-price guys left. And we're starting to see some have to eat your young in the business. So the off-price guys have to take business from each other now. And we're going to see more of that going forward. But yes, it's a dominant force in retailing today.
Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead on this Personal Finance Wednesday, taking money spent on monthly subscriptions and using it to build wealth.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets have turned lower. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And it seemed like for the entire morning that the markets were riding the good vibes from bank earnings. It's earnings season now for third quarter earnings, and the banks are hitting out of the park. But as is the case, whenever you see a major downturn or sudden rally, it means someone somewhere talked. Did that happen today?
Well, you know, Rod, the bank earnings are phenomenal. Earnings are going to be up about 8% for this third quarter. But we are, of course, flying blind with no data, right? You know, we didn't get a jobs report. We're not getting an inflation report. We're presumably not getting a GDP report. And, of course, we have this increased trade tension standoff with China, and the markets banged around quite a bit, right? Big sell-off on Friday, then two up days. One would expect to see sharp reversals, at least in the time being, until we get a little bit more clarity, especially, you know, will this sort of side summit between Xi and Trump happen next week or so? So a lot of uncertainty, and the markets are very high right now.
And then taking a look at just the way trading takes place on a daily basis, a lot of it is algorithmic now. And does the algorithm really respond to specific news events out of China? Because this has been going on for almost a year now, and it seems to follow a familiar pattern where threats are made, postures are established, and then they're reversed. And the sell-off is suddenly followed by a fierce volley of buying. So how do markets react specifically to individual pieces of news, especially on something nearly as vital as trade negotiations between the U.S. and China?
You make a good point about algorithmic trading, and it's pervasive. And so, yes, there's this leading edge. You know, look at the Bitcoin market that dropped precipitously on Friday on essentially algorithmic trading and all that about the China stuff, risk off. But then eventually the individual investor or fund managers step in to kind of take advantage of it. So it creates these volatile reversals. I think, unfortunately, investors are somewhat used to it. So when you have these big up mornings, can kind of be a sell signal when volatility has been elevated as it is.
Now let's talk about bank earnings. Bank of America shares jumping 4% after the bank posting third quarter earnings and revenue that beat analyst expectations. Morgan Stanley also beat the street. Its shares up by 5%. We now have enough from the big banks to glean a storyline here. And what story are the banks telling?
Well, Wall Street's having a great year. I mean, you know, and investors, you know, out there listening are probably having a great year. So deal activity is ramping up. Trading has been incredible. Fixed income is kind of out of its slumber. So, you know, all these are great for banks. And, you know, they had relatively modest PEs when everyone is chasing, of course, these high PE super companies. So good opportunities there for them. But again, even on these banks, you got a big bank up 5%. That can be a sell signal for algorithmic trading as well. So you have to be careful, as always, with stocks and chasing good news.
Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, cancel a few subscriptions now and start using that money to build your financial future.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. In a time of auto-renew everything, many people spend hundreds each month on subscriptions and small recurring expenses, from streaming services and meal kits to forgotten app trials. But what if you cancel a few of those and redirected that same money into your own personal finances? It could be a game changer. We welcome in Sherry Greco-Rikas, Regional Director at EP Wealth in Chicago, author of Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And how many times has this happened to you or to us, where you discover that you're still paying for some streaming service, for some show that has not been seen in 3 or 4 years, and you just discover, wait a minute, I've been tossing $11 a month away for years now for this service I no longer utilize, and that happens for some people many times a month, and that adds up over time.
Well, fortunately, Rob, I follow my own advice, and I do my own audit on subscriptions, but even doing that, every now and then, you know, you get enticed to try one of these apps on, you know, Apple, and you do these apps and it says free trial for 30 days. You give your credit card and you forget about the 30 days. So I've been caught with that. But, you know, your listeners need, it's a rainy day, pull out your phone. You know, you can look at your credit card statements. You'll see payments go through there. You can see emails maybe from a subscription that you have. And you can even go to your digital phone. There's a way to check your subscriptions. But it's time, you know, are you really using these subscriptions? And think about it, $20, $30, $40, $50 a month really adds up. Maybe you could pay down a credit card. You can add some savings. You can start a vacation fund. You can do a lot of things with those subscription money.
Personal Finance Wednesday is sponsored by Consumers Credit Union. Let's talk about the investing side of things, because you might say to yourself, well, $11 a month put into an investment account, what difference is that going to make? But the analogy that I have, it's like going to the gym. Maybe you lift weights for a half hour or 45 minutes a day, but if you keep doing that every day for a couple of months, the next thing you know, oh, look, that's an arm. Or look, I have definition here where it didn't exist before, and that was just the result of a small investment of your time on a daily or semi-daily basis, and that could be the same thing for that $11 that's being devoted to a subscription you no longer use.
And you and I have talked a lot about this. It's not just what you save, it's the act of starting to save. And maybe it's $10 a month, maybe it grows to 15 or 20. But over time, you know, start saving and really look at where, you know, gym memberships, things like that. Are you really, really using it? I did get caught, Rob. I'm thinking about, I had one of those massage subscriptions at one of the places where you pay a monthly fee, and all of a sudden I, you know, ended up having 4 credits that I hadn't used, and I ended up taking the whole family one day and I ended up canceling it. So you know, even people that watch it can get caught. So no one's immune to this.
Yeah, we finally had to bid farewell to our bicycle exercise content subscription from the COVID-19 era, because even though I used it a couple of times a week, I didn't use it enough to justify continue paying for it. So that $40 is now being deployed to someplace more useful.
And 40 times 12, $480, that's real money compounding over years and years and years, and it really will help.
Boy, you rattled that off with confidence. That's why you're the financial planner and I'm not.
Numbers are my thing.
But once again,
always trying to save a little bit.
That $40 a month, it's really the one thing, if you learn anything from listening to this program, is just the power of compounding interest. And there are calculators now that can tell you how much your money can grow over a period of time at a certain percentage rate. And you'll be stunned at how quickly that small amount can grow into something substantial.
Yeah, and I did an analysis, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but if you start saving a certain amount at age 25, if you wait till 35, you almost have to save three times as much to get to the same ending number. So when you're young, time is on your side, and every little bit helps. So that Peloton subscription or one of the subscriptions, some other bike subscription you're not using, put it away and start saving.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, Regional Director of EP Wealth in Chicago, author of Maximize Your Return on Life. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, advice for job seekers who are navigating a tough market amid the government shutdown.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's already been a tough job market, and now, with uncertainty surrounding the government shutdown, job seekers face even more challenges. Joining us to discuss is Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern, based in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And this job market is unique from other from times in which the economy is actually in recession, in that people aren't firing, but at the same time, businesses aren't hiring either. And now even more people are caught up in this holding pattern.
That's a really good point. I can tell you, having been in this business for almost 40 years now, we tend to get preoccupied by the external environment, which has almost nothing to do with any of us as an individual. And what I mean by that is, we've talked about this before, I would say at the end of the year, Thanksgiving to Christmas or New Year's, I would often tell my clients, this is the best time to be in the market, because everyone's on a calendar fiscal year, or most are. And they're going to make their changes or make decisions about who's leaving and who we need to hire in that last quarter. And they're actually going to be around. They're not traveling to different markets or different countries. And that's what's going on right now. The public market that everybody looks at and uses to measure jobs is all about how many ads or how many postings or what is on Indeed or what's on LinkedIn. And the reality is that's not the way 80% of the people in the U.S. don't get jobs that way. So now you have that part of the market, which makes you nervous because it doesn't look like there's anything out there. You also have the news saying, us included, that there's nobody's hiring. But the reality is they are still hiring. They're just not doing it publicly, and they're not doing it en masse. They're doing it one at a time based on need, which goes back to the basics of what we've always talked about, which is who do you know, who can you get in front of that might need someone like you, regardless of whether they actually have that need until they meet you. And it's the just good old, you know, bootstrap, hard work networking, and knowing that this time, when everybody's worried, your competition goes down because a lot of people just go to ground and don't try.
Now, it seems like, you know, there are two types of job seekers out there. There are the people who are in a job, they're looking for a different job. Then, of course, there are people who don't have a job and they're looking for full-time employment. And that could be the case for hundreds or thousands of federal workers who may be riffed as a result of the government shutdown. Now, if you are out of work, in a way, you're liberated in your job search, because you can actually say, look, I can devote every minute of every day to finding a new job, as opposed to someone who's currently employed who has to be a little more circumspect about their job search.
Right.
So let's just take the government employment part. You know, there are certainly in government employment, there are certain places that you're not allowed to work because there may be confidentiality issues. If you're have some sort of secured responsibilities, whether it's cybersecurity, et cetera. In the general healthcare environment, there's probably not much that you are restricted from by the government. And I think the other thing about it is, given the fact that the government's in contraction, they don't have the man hours or the time or the interest to try to figure out who's looking and who isn't. It's not like this is a robust, booming company where we really need you, Rob, to stay and be the director of whatever. This is an organization that's very typically heavily bureaucratic, and where they're worried about themselves. I, without naming names, I can tell you I have friends in government healthcare who are secure, but who are hearing from their two levels up from them, "Hey, have you heard anything?" So no one's going to be looking. You're looking for trouble that probably doesn't exist if you're in a government job looking. You're right. When you're working, it's hard to look. But when you're not working, it's hard to rationalize why you're available. So they both have positives and negatives.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.